listen to the Jason Greger Show presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Remember, if you gamble, use your game sense, stay within your limits. Go to gamesense.ab.ca.
Arda Okel joins us from ESPN. And Arda, the ageless wonder known as Corey Perry, had 19 goals last year, obviously then scored 8 more in the playoffs for the Oilers. He is proof that speed isn't always necessary to succeed in the National Hockey League.
No, and scoring in front of the net and finding your spots and, you know, just being an overall pest on the ice. The longevity is extremely impressive. I think back on that Anaheim Ducks team in 07, right? Like that was a formidable force, that team. It was a great roster. And they almost got Crosby. Like, imagine, I thought about this. We were talking about this the other day because we were doing a whole Crosby Ovechkin thing. Imagine if the Ducks in that year had won the draft lottery or that whatever the system was, and they had been able to get Crosby, and Crosby was on that team. It would have been unbelievable.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it would have been wild. So now looking at we're early on still in the season, but it's 10 games in, and you wonder who's who. Is there an NHL team that you are like, okay, you know what? I thought they were going to be really good, but their first 10 games has given you pause to say, ooh, maybe they won't be as good as I thought.
There's a few. I mean, I guess the Tampa Bay Lightning comes to mind. I think that they will settle in, though. I think that they're just bit by some unfortunate circumstances. I do think that they're going to level out. I have a lot more teams that I'm surprised by in a good way than a bad way, honestly. Like, the Seattle Kraken have been off to a great start. The Canadians are rolling. The Devils are like among the top of the league, and the Utah Mammoth are like a wagon. Like the Mammoth were like kind of like a popular, they're going to make the playoffs pick by a lot of hockey pundits to start the season. But man, that top line looks so good right now. And I do feel like they'll be able to sustain those vibes throughout the season. And I think that they end up being a playoff team for sure.
Where do you come out on Detroit?
That is an excellent question. I have been lukewarm on Detroit for the last few years. I mean, as many people have, obviously. I wonder if this is if this is their norm. The young players have definitely stepped up in the first few games for them. They've gotten some decent goaltending here and there to start the year. I still wonder if they're going to sustain this pace. I can see them being contending for a wild card, but I'm still, let me say this, I'm not completely sold yet on the Red Wings being a playoff team, even though they've had a good start.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not sold yet. Like, I still look at Tampa Bay. I think is gonna find their way here. I think the Ottawa Senators are still gonna find their way here a little bit. And now the East is super close right now. No, like the only team that I look and say, man, I know they started well, but the Boston Bruins look all sorts of discombobulated for me. Like of all the teams, like even the Islanders are close to a 500 team. Right, like they are. They got 4-4-1. The Boston Bruins are the one team in the East where I'm like, oof, I don't like how that team looks at all.
No, and they could be some serious sellers if this continues at the trade deadline. And I wonder what happens with. I mean, it would be inconceivable at the moment to think of players like David Pastrnak not being on that team. But if this team continues in this way and they are looking at a rebuild, then you got to wonder which, I'm not saying Pastrnak is going to be the guy to leave. I'm just saying which pieces would they be looking at and how will they retool that team? Because it doesn't look good in Beantown at the moment. I agree with you.
Yeah. And it's not like they got a ton of pieces that, you know, because teams, the pieces that teams are looking for, they don't really have, like outside of Pastrnak. But, I mean, like Charlie McAvoy, I think can play better than he has early on. But Jeremy Swayman for the second year in a row is not off to a good start at all. And it's funny because when he had his great year a few years ago, their team defense wasn't very good. Kevin Woodley outlined how, both him and Allmark that year were the ones who kind of saved Buffalo because they're Boston. Their defensive structure wasn't great. So, you know what? He's played well before without a good defensive structure. But since then, man, like ever since the holdout, he just hasn't found his game at all.
No, and that's a deal where if this continues for him, that contract is not going to look good on the Boston Bruins. But there's still time. There's still time. I mean, we could be proven wrong one win streak later, and all of a sudden they're in the mix, and that, you know, that could change fortunes. But I mean, it just doesn't, the vibes do not match that hope for sure. And I just don't, I'm with you. I don't think that we're going to get too much better from Boston this season. We'll see.
Arta Lokal, join Arta. Where do you come out on the Seattle Kraken?
I like what I'm seeing from them so far. I question whether they'll be able to continue where they're going. Like, we're getting some good performances from the likes of Shane Wright, et cetera, Joey Decord. We're getting some good over performances from certain players. I still don't see them as a playoff team. I see them leveling out. I see them maybe like a December 6 or 7 game losing streak, going 500 for a month, and then, you know, falling out of wild card contention. I'm not completely sold on the immediate future of the Seattle Kraken.
What do you make of Marty Natchez and the whole, like, Colorado had Rantanen, they didn't want to pay him, then they get Marty Natchez, and now Rantanen's making 12, but I had heard that, you know, he would have taken 11 in Colorado, and he got Natchez for 11.5, or sorry, 13 in Colorado, yeah. And they got Natchez for 11.5. It kind of seems like they might have erred, and now they're like, well, we got to get Marty. Like, I like Marty Natchez, but I don't love Marty Natchez at 11.5 or 8 million, especially when I look at his production in the playoffs.
Sure, but he will certainly have the opportunity to prove all of us wrong, because he's going to participate in the postseason. And, you know, that depth caliber piece is going to be vitally important, as we know, in the postseason. It's usually the middle six that really power things, if that's where they deploy him in the postseason. So I do think like we and the other thing is, though, we also have seen some team-friendly deals recently, right? I mean, I'm even taking McDavid out of this. I mean, like Jack Eichel to me is a slight team friendly deal. He could have probably gotten $500,000 or $1 million more elsewhere, I would guess, but, you know, eighth year, etc. So I think maybe the number might be a little high for him today, but the potential is there for him to really step up where they need him, especially in the postseason. So I'm not too bearish on that necessarily.
There was lots of pending UFAs that have signed extensions. The two biggest names left are Panarin and Kempe, both in major markets on different sides of the country. Mm-hmm. Panarin's off to a very slow start, 7 points in 11 games. And without Trocheck, it just hasn't looked very good. What do you think the odds are that he stays in New York? What do you think the odds are Kempe stays in L.A.?
I think the odds are low for Panarin. If he has a bad season, I could see him being a trade deadline piece. It's quite possible. A lot of teams could certainly use a Panarin in a support role, like a second or even third line role. In the postseason, I could see that happening without a doubt. I could Kempe more likely to stay with the Kings, I would guess, because they very likely are a playoff team. I mean, aren't they already on a collision course with the Oilers for the fifth straight year? I mean, have we not written the script already, Jason? Seems destined to occur again. And by the way, for the math symmetry people out there, this would have to be a 4-3 series win for the Oilers to make it whole, right? 4-3, 4-2, 4-1, 4-2, 4-3, right? That's how it would go, series victories. So for the math symmetry fans out there.
Yeah, well, I think it's funny. Even though Edmonton's won all the series, some Oilers fans are like, oh, I'm tired of playing LA. I'm like, you're tired of winning? I never understood
exactly.
That one. Like, what? What do you mean you're tired of winning? Like, I get in theory what they mean. Yeah, you don't want to play the same team all the time. I understand it. But you play Dallas 5 years in a row and you only ever won one. I think you'd rather play L.A. 4 times in a row and win all 4. Just me. I could be wrong on that, but that's kind of how I would view it. The Edmonton Oilers, like, I find the Edmonton Oilers are the team that they've been in the Stanley Cup final twice, and people are still like, yeah, but. There's lots of yeah, buts for a team that makes it to the Stanley Cup final, and last year really kind of dominated the Western Conference on the way to get there.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. Like from my 20,000 foot view, obviously you guys are in the trenches every day. I'm trying to keep an eye on all 32 teams, but that I would say is a very accurate assessment of at least how I'm hearing it at you know, from my perch, certainly. A lot of the same question marks, you know, slow out of the gates to start the year, probably will ramp up, you know, by December, and Connor McDavid will be doing his Connor McDavid things again, and then they'll have a great postseason run, even make it to the Stanley Cup final again. I don't think we'd be too surprised if that occurred, but then we would have even more conversations, especially with the contract that McDavid signed, if they were to lose in the Cup final for a third straight year. I do think the return of Zach Hyman, hopefully being sooner than later, will be very, very helpful. Connor McDavid, the fact that he has he had two goals against Utah, right? And he had one goal before that for the start of the season. Like, that's not sustainable. That's not McDavid at all. So, I mean, I expect him to get back on course. I think we all do.
Well, yeah, if he shoots a puck a little bit more, for sure. The Oilers offense, I think it seems like, you know, for whatever reason, they have a slow start. Matthias Ekholm joked. He said, yeah, but it's the best start we've had since I was here and for 3 years. So 5-4-2 is good. They take on the Rangers tonight, Arda. And now the Rangers, they're in the East, and I outlined, like, yeah, they're off to kind of a slow start, but they're not out of it. They're only 2 points out of the playoffs. It's very close early on. They haven't dug themselves a deep hole. They got the new coach. It seems that their defensive structure has improved. Do you think they've got the horses offensively, though, to actually score enough to win regularly?
No, early on in the season, they've looked very slow. And yes. A lot of the analysts here have been picking the brains of the analysts here at ESPN, and they've been saying it's likely the biggest culprit is likely the adjustment to the Mike Sullivan system versus what they had previously. So that might take a little bit of time for the players to adjust, but the Rangers also don't really fare well against the Oilers. Like, they've lost the last four games in this matchup in regulation. So the Oilers certainly have that advantage, the historical advantage. But in terms of the Rangers, Igor Shesterkin has bailed them out. I mean, as much as he can. Like, he even through the losses, even through the first three home games, setting that NHL record for not scoring at home, being shut out three straight home games to start a season, he was posting a .960 save percentage.
Yeah.
Like, it's unbelievable, the fact that he was playing so well with the team in front of him not being able to produce at all. So we'll see what version of the Rangers we get here, but Edmonton, you know, has a real opportunity to be able to feast if they get a lot of chances on Shesterkin.
Yeah, well, Shesterkin obviously is an elite goalie, but it's funny. The Edmonton, I looked at Shesterkin's career numbers, you know, the last 4 years. He's like a .917 save percentage, 2.5 goals against, except when he plays the Oilers. He's 1-3. He's got like an .866 save percentage. It's kind of wild. So for whatever reason, the Edmonton Oilers have had his number. And Stuart Skinner, who's 4-0 in his last four starts against the Rangers, seems to get up for that. And that happens in small sample sizes for lots of different ones. Arda, before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts on the World Series and what you've seen thus far.
It's been awesome. It's been highly entertaining. I stayed up for all of game three. I was very mad at the end of that game because it was like 3 a.m. local time, and I was like, oh, why did I stay up until the 18th inning only for this to happen? Why did we pitch to Freddie Freeman? But you know what? It doesn't matter, Jason. You know why? Because the Jays are up 3-2 in the series. The World Series will be awarded in Toronto either way. But let's go, Blue Jays. I'm born and raised in Toronto. Apologies to the Edmonton listeners. But for those that are Blue Jays fans, I join you right now in saying, let's go, Blue Jays. I hope to see a parade on Yonge Street for Blue Jays and their fans in the next week.
Well, it should be a wild game tomorrow night, wild atmosphere in Toronto tomorrow night, and pitching duo potentially. We'll see if the Jays can win their first World Series in 32 years. It'll be fun to watch. Arda, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Anytime.